Okay. Good morning, everyone. I want to give a short bio of Rabbi Drazen, well, a medium bio, and then he's going to speak about the surveys that USBJ conducted on instruments, music, and Torah reading. So Rabbi Drazen holds a portfolio of assignments which span the United Synagogue. He directs publishing Torah Sparks, Perach Yomi, and the Luach, and he provides consulting services to USCJ member congregations. He is staff director of Committee on Public Policy, and through his work as staff director of the Committee on Congregational Standards, he directs the conservative movement's Alternative Dispute Resolution Services. He has served as a USCJ representative on our placement committee for over 8 years. A noted authority on kashrut, Rabbi Drazen wrote the chapter on keeping kosher in the observant life, a rabbinical assembly publication, as well as the manuals for supervising kashrut in synagogue kitchens. He served as spiritual leader of Bethel Synagogue, Omaha, Nebraska, for 20 years. And he came to USCJ as executive director of Mid-Continent Region USCJ and director of the Department of Congregational Service. Rabbi Drazen has been active in areas including religious broadcasting, hospital ethics, and domestic violence prevention. He has served on the Committee on Jewish Law and Standards and the staff of Ramah in Wisconsin. And even with all this busyness, he's here to talk to us about the survey. So, Rabbi Drazen, I'm going to give you maybe 30-ish minutes. Everyone, you should have handouts that came through Gmail. If you didn't, you can email me at cantormimi@aol.com, and I will forward them to you. I'm going to ask if you have questions for Rabbi Drazen that you email me, again, cantormimi@aol.com, and at the end of the Nash and Drash, I will ask them on your behalf. So without further ado, Rabbi Drazen, take it away.
Thank you very much, and hi, everybody. It is a pleasure to be able to chat with you a little bit about the survey information. I'm going to be reviewing some of the things that are in the results of you as you've seen them, and I do welcome questions and comments as much as possible. Excuse me. One of the things that we started doing about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago, 18 months, I guess, by now, at the United Synagogue is to begin to ask a couple of questions about who are we really? We all recognize the fact that we're not Orthodox, we're not Reformed, so therefore we're in the middle, but that was not really the best possible description of who we are. So over the past 18 months, a little bit longer, we have begun taking surveys at the United Synagogue beyond the salary survey, parenthetically. It is the only full survey of all staff positions in Kehillot in North America, and we hope that your congregation does participate in it, close parentheses. But I'm trying to find out a little bit more about who we are. So we have been sending out various surveys. The ones we're going to talk about a little bit today are the use of musical instruments on Shabbat. And let me just say now that when I say musical, when I say music, I mean musical instruments. I know there is a difference. As I said to one person who said about congregations who don't use music on Shabbat, and I said, frankly, I don't know of any congregation that doesn't use music on Shabbat. I know congregations that do or do not use musical instruments, but I've never been to a shul that doesn't use music in some way on Shabbat. So I apologize now if I use the shorthand music instead of musical instruments, but I want to just make that statement now. We've also taken surveys about what age you have bat mitzvah. We're currently running something on daily minyans because we're trying to find out a little bit about what our congregations do. Do they have services? They don't have services. Who runs them? And who leads them and so forth. So with that background, let me just say that the musical instruments survey began really from a question that we were asked a couple of times, enough times that I finally was willing to go and stick my neck out and say, let's ask the question, let's find out where we are. For everyone's information, in case you don't know, the Rabbinical Assembly's Committee on Jewish Law and Standards has been discussing this issue for a number of years, and there has been a tshuva, which is in the process of being written now, in the process for at least the last 4 years that I can account for, talking about the question of use of musical instruments on Shabbat. And that is something which is in process, moving along more slowly, I think, than anybody had anticipated, because very frankly, the situation is that there's a lot more complexities to the use of music. One of the things that I discovered when I asked the question to start the musical instrument survey, which was whether or not do we allow use of musical instruments in our Kehillah on Shabbat or Yom Tov, was that the results came out, as you can see if you look at page 3 of the report, that 50% said yes and 50% said no, which of course sounds like one of those classic conservative Judaism jokes. But I got a lot of that had to do with the fact that what I discovered is that yes and no is not a question that is easily answered, as much as it may sound. Going through the results, and we had some 365 kehilot who participated in this, which is a rather remarkable number. That is, when you talk about congregations that are large enough to even have staff members, and we do have quite a number that are not, 365 represents more than half the congregations in the United Synagogue. So to get that kind of a response on a survey, the actual number of answers was closer to 500, but we did have some congregations where two or three people took the survey. I then edited and put the results, which usually agreed with each other, into the results as we see here, and a little bit further on I can talk about that. At any rate, the official number was 50-50, split using of musical instruments and not. And one of the things that we did find is that, again, on page 3, the graph reflects that the distribution of answers shows that we got answers from across North America, so we can't say that it was tilted in any one direction or another, just in terms of the layout and where the congregations were. And in fact, if you look at the graph there on the bottom of page 3, what you'll see is that even in the districts, the split is pretty close to 50-50, with a couple of exceptions. The Metropolitan New York District, it's still more say no than yes. In the Pacific Southwest, three times as many say yes as no. But almost every place else, the split is pretty close to 50-50, all the way across the continent. When we begin on page 4 and for the next few pages, all of these answers are the ones that reflect the congregations that said, yes, we use instruments on Shabbat. So when you look at the top of page 4 and you see that 85% of the congregations say they will use musical instruments at any time of year for Kabbalat Shabbat, what that is that's 85% of the half of the congregations that say they use it. So I guess if you were going to be extrapolating it out, we could say that 40% of the congregations would do. But what is clear from here is that the use of musical instrumentation is very much very, very highly focused on Friday evening, where you have 85%, 84% of congregations that use musical instruments will use them for Kabbalat Shabbat, some of them also for Maariv. But if you take a look down there where the other boxes are, but one-third of the congregations, actually slightly less than a third, will use the musical instruments for Shacharit or for Musaf on Shabbat. So, again, musical instruments, as a rule of thumb, more than 2-to-1. It is a Friday night piece at our congregations rather than a Shabbos morning one. But Havdalah comes in at around 68%, so we do have people use it. Now, this is where the yes-no started getting a little fuzzy, because we had people who would say they would use musical instruments for Kabbalat Shabbat during daylight savings time, during the summer, up to Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, or alternatively, they would use musical instruments for Havdalah on a Saturday night in the winter. So these are people who said, yes, they do use musical instruments, when halakhically you could easily argue they're not using musical instruments on Shabbat. So that is where this whole yes-no thing became a little bit fuzzy. And if you take a look at the box on page 4 below the chart, you'll see that YES has various meetings. And let me say at this point that that has no political import is given to that comment. It was simply an observation at this point. One of the things we discovered all the way through in the use of musical instruments, and the reason why I left the number of comments that I did, is that consistently, for the vast majority of the congregations, even those who use musical instruments on Shabbat, the use of the instruments is limited. Because, again, you say, yes, we use it if twice a year or three times a year or once a month there's a special service on a Friday night with kids that uses musical instruments. That's the same yes that would be there if every Friday night you had a band. So there are various levels of how you use it. Quite often, depending on the nature of the service, alternatives, special programs that may be there. And again, we do have. We'll get into a little bit further the question of what kind of instruments are used. But we do see that the music there is sort of an interesting kind of a piece. If you look at top of page 5, we were trying to see how long people have been using instruments, because clearly one of the things when you write a survey is you try to say, what does everybody know, and then find out if everybody is right when everybody knows something. So the first thing we took a look at was to see, well, everybody knows that use of musical instruments in conservative movement is relatively new. And what we found out instead is that about half of the congregations that have used musical instruments currently have been using them now for more than 7 years. And in fact, if you do take a look, more than 10 years, 30% of the congregations. Right now, it almost seems that the tendency seems to be slowing a little bit. My sense is, based on that congregations that currently use musical instruments may have saturated their market, so to speak, and that the congregations that are at this point not using musical instruments may not be changing to use musical instruments. It's sort of a spoiler, I guess, for the end of the discussion, but one of the pieces that has been said on both sides, people who use musical instruments and those who do not, is they really, really, really want to have an answer from the Rabbinical Assembly, from the Law Committee, about use of musical instruments. It is not anywhere near as clear as people would think. This is one of these areas where congregations are moving along, even though the halakha from the law committee is, let us say, vague at this point. The other piece that we noticed, if you look down at the middle of page 5, is that use of musical instruments on the high holidays is way, way more, twice as much almost. For 7 to 10 years, 60% of the congregations have been using it, whereas on Shabbat it is less than that. My sense, again, I didn't do a real follow-up on this, is that there were probably a lot of congregations, and there still may be, who for the high holidays with choir or back in the days when there were organs, were using musical instruments on the high holidays in a main service or a service, whereas the rest of the time of the year they did not. So, again, that was sort of a surprise. And if you look at the bottom of the chart at the bottom of page 5, you can see where this spread is of where the congregations are that use it, use music, and how long they have been doing so. Again, if you take a look at the Pacific Southwest, which is the far right end of the graph, again, politics notwithstanding, just happens to be where they come out, what you see there is that 30% of the congregations have been using the instruments for 7 to 10 years, more than seven years or longer, whereas in the metropolitan New York district, for instance, it's only 12%, and the rest of the districts do pretty well, even out after that. If you take a look at page 6, you start seeing what kind of instruments are used. Organ is coming in at the bottom at 33%. I'm sure that has more to do with issues that are not so much organ as instrument as organ as concept. But if you do look, acoustic instruments, 93% of the congregation, percussion instruments. And we did have a number of answers where they very specifically, when they said they use musical instruments, they were referring specifically to hand play percussion, conga drums, tambourines, and such, even as opposed to a percussion instrument that you play with a stick. And you can see that we there's a differentiation between 80% saying hand play instruments and 62% saying stick play. But again, you can see acoustic instruments at 93%, piano and electric keyboard come out in the 60-70% sort of a group. So there's a quick view of what instruments are used. And we did do a follow-up, which I'll deal with very, very, very briefly on the musical instrument follow-up. But the data from that one is a little weak because we did not get a huge response to it. At the bottom of page 6, there was a question that I knew the answer for, which is, do the people who use the musical instruments, do they have to be Jewish or do they have to be not Jewish? And I knew when I was coming in that the vast majority of congregations would say that the musicians have to be not Jewish. And what we really found out instead is that 75%, it's not a question. Either that it hasn't been asked or nobody thought about it or it really doesn't make a difference. There are people who say 22% must be Jewish, but based on the information that I had about people who are in choirs, where the vast majority, again, I'm just guessing, the vast majority of people who serve in congregational choirs must be Jewish, even if they're professionals, I would have assumed that the religion of the musician would have had some impact, and frankly, I was really surprised that they did not. When we look at page 7 and we start looking, what was the impact of having musical instruments being used? And again, you take a look at the chart, the big red box at the top said that initially 83% say that it increased the number of adults attending the service. We don't need to look at the rest of that chart. More interesting is the one that is on page 8 at the bottom, where I did a comparison between the responses of what happened when we first used musical instruments and then when we've continued to use them. And you can see there that there was a big rush at the beginning for increasing the number of people who came, but it settled down both for adults and for teens. The biggest change is the people who were upset, whereas 55% were initially upset. That dropped down to 30%. And it's likely the case is that people who were consistently upset left the congregation altogether, and you can see that under the upset, a large number of members as well, that one dropped to zero, probably for the same kind of a reason. What I found interesting is whether or not did it have an impact, whether the music energized shul goers or energized even the musicians. Just in terms of the, or whether it drew in new members. And, you know, it's really not conclusive. Some people said yes, some people said no, but the split is close enough to 50-50 that I wouldn't be able to say conclusively that whereas everyone seems to agree that initially at least, and then to a certain degree later on, the number of adults attending services were impacted by the use of musical instruments, this does not seem to be a guaranteed way of energizing either consistent shul goers or even the people who are musicians. In fact, but again, if you'll notice, there's one other piece where on both sides, though, everybody agreed that the fostering passive participation, in other words, if you installed musical instruments, did it make the service less participatory? And everybody, at least these two groups, say that the beginning it didn't, and continuing on, that stayed pretty steady. Excuse me. So yeah, that didn't change too terribly much. And if you take a look at page 9, at the top there you can see the chart that talks about the difference between first using musical instruments and those who did not. Again, so a quick summary for the congregations that do use instruments. It is not consistent. The vast majority do not use them all the time. That the largest use is for special programs or services, whether it's a once-a-month service or a quarterly service or a youth service or something. But there are very few congregations that musical instruments are used consistently all the time. And again, if you take a look at the comments that you will see there, that you know, often it's when there's a youth service or something like that that musical instruments are used. As we continue on page 10, my page 9 and page 10 are stuck together, the question is this something that you will continue doing? You're currently using musical instruments. Will you stick with it? And it's pretty much 90% say we're not willing to change. 10%, you know, are saying, well, we'd be willing to discuss it. But the special comments, I'd like to draw attention to especially comment number 2. I do not believe instruments increase the spirituality of the service. I do not believe congregational participation is enhanced with instruments. That comment, I know very specifically, was put in by a chazan. Take a look at the bottom comments. It has added little to the service. It was not the boost we'd hoped for. And then the one on the bottom, every couple of years. Now, this is a congregation that does use musical instruments. They still revisit the comment, the question every couple of years, and there's no compelling reason to change. Again, I left the comments in. Some people were very impressed with what music has done to the service. Some people are okay with it, but the vast majority aren't willing to change back. They're staying where they are at about 90%. When we continue on page 11, this is the half of the survey for the people who said no, they do not use musical instruments on Shabbat. And the number one reason for the people who say the conservative movement does not have halakha at its heart, 80% of the congregations responding who said they do not use musical instruments don't use musical instruments because of the halachic difficulties that allowing musical instruments would cause. And when you take a look at the reasons that are there, even the tradition not to, though no halachic objections, is up there pretty high, as again the worry that traditionally oriented congregants would be disenfranchised. I put in the last two answers because we want to be different than other kahilot in the area, or we want to be similar to, because I thought those two would be an interesting thing, and I was assuming higher numbers. I would have assumed that more congregations would have been worried about what was going on in the other shuls down the block or around them when they made their decision, but clearly, that's why you take a survey, because then you find out that your assumptions were simply wrong. If you take a look at the last comment on page 11, this one really speaks to the comment I began with. We do a lot of singing during services. A general feeling of good ruach prevails. Music and musical instruments are not the same thing. Again, that was an answer that came from a congregation that does not use musical instruments on Shabbat. At the top of page 12, we asked the same kind of a question. If you could, would you begin using musical instruments on Shabbat? And the answer there is different, whereas the congregations that do use musical instruments at 90% said they would stay where they are. Here we have 70% saying stay where we are, and 30%, my assumption is if the halacha would allow it, that we would move, and a lot of those congregations would shift. And again, if you look at the selected comments there, over and over again, and there were lots and lots of comments, the question really was is, when we find out what the halakha is when we will begin actually talking about that a little bit more. The bottom of the page 12, you'll see who answered the questions. This was really a surprise to me. The percentage of response, 15 of those percent came from cantors, 13% from presidents, 22% from rabbis. In the other category, again, because we would often have, in fact, there was one congregation where we got 6 or 7 responses from members of staff and their lay people. We sort of bunched them together to get the answers, and I put those into the other group. But if you see what the split is in the other group of the 133 others, 67 answers were from rabbis, 42 from chazanim, 33 from executive directors, 32 from presidents. That pretty well summarizes the information there. I think what we discovered as we were looking at it, and especially looking through the answers, the written answers, is the issue that congregations deal with when they start talking about music is not musical instruments as such. The question is, what is the impact on the worship? Consistently, on both sides, people who say that the use of musical instruments, when that becomes the central theme, rather than the davening, and musical instruments take the place of davening as the important feature, it's not a good thing for anybody. But if you have musical instruments that are used to increase the davening, to increase participation, the hitlahavut that comes from use of musical instruments, those are the people who say that's something to think about. So ultimately, musical instruments for us is not the issue. The tefillah is the issue. And it speaks to that instruments alone aren't going to solve the attendance problem, and instruments alone are not going to answer what's going to make somebody want to come and daven. Musical instruments are a tool at best, and sometimes like all good tools, and I have a couple of kitchen knives to prove it, just because something can turn a screw, that is not necessarily the best tool to use for it, and I do try to do that only with tableware that we're not currently using for meals. As I said, I did a survey for congregations that did use musical instruments. I believe we sent this out also, which is just to get some further detail on the use of the musical instruments, find out who they are, what kinds of things you were there. Frankly, I don't want to spend a lot of time looking at this one because it's not terribly interesting. What I did find out is where people were very interested in answering the first set of questions, not so much in the second. So we sent out a whole bunch of second survey. We sent the survey to 358 people, and 67 took the survey. So that pretty well shows you that the follow-up was not as interesting, at least the people who took it. Again, if you want to follow around and look, what was interesting is that the majority of congregations that do have people, it is the members of their congregation who are playing the instruments, not necessarily non-members. They may be professionals, but they are volunteers. They're members more than anything else. And again, when we followed up a little bit on increase of interest for davening and participating, we're at the top of page 5. The musicians, the member musicians, a little bit became more interested in Jewish observance, not too terribly much, at least according to the people who are here. This may not be a big surprise for you. At the bottom of page 5, you'll find out that the Chazanim are the people who are doing and finding most of the music. You'll often find in congregations where rabbi is, the person is maybe because that congregation does not have a chazan or a cantorial soloist or a music director. The chazan is the person who works and rehearses and conducts the service, conducts the musicians at the service as well. I thought was interesting, the last piece is how often do you review what musical instruments have done for your service? And the fact is that nobody's asking that question. And I think that is probably the most difficult piece of all. In other words, we have musical instruments in place, but are they helping with the davening or are they not helping with the davening is certainly an interesting question. Ketramini, I'm ready to pause here if there are any questions specifically on this before we get on to the Torah reading. Costa.
Okay. I did not get anything emailed to me. I'm going to put it out there. And does anybody have any questions? And if so, unmute yourself and ask it, say who you are and what your question is.
I had a question. Abe Lubin.
Hi.
I would like to ask if the issue of halakha and the usage of musical instruments, is that ultimately at this point still a strong halachic issue within the Rabbinical Assembly Law Committee? That would rather be surprising, and would it make any difference in terms of who is using and who is not using it? Because at the end of the day, each congregation is autonomous, and wherever there is a rabbi, in most cases, he or she would be the Mara de Atra, and therefore, what is the point, in a sense, of the halachic issue to be still an issue?
The impression I had from reading through all of the answers is that For instance, there were a large number of lay people who responded who said the ritual committee, the executive committee, the board would like to have music, but the rabbi Azmar D'Atra will not allow it.
There
so
you go.
The halacha is there, and that is reflected in the large number of answers from rabbis and lay people alike who said, we're looking for an answer. The name Elliot Dorf popped up more than once. Elliot is one of the people who is working on the tshuva. So I would say at this point there are quite a number. I can't give you a percent, but a large number of the people who said they are not using musical instruments on Shabbat, if there was indeed a tshuva from the rabbinical assembly that said you may use musical instruments, I believe there are people who would. And halachically, look, when I look at it, I know playing a guitar, it seems to me, again, I haven't studied the issue, it seems that playing a guitar would be halachically more complex than playing an electric keyboard. You know, the snapping of strings and the tendency, and I will not claim to be a Julian Bream or any other kind of classic guitarist, but when I used to play on my guitar, not play it, play on it, as I say, I used to fiddle with the tuning, and again, that's where you start having the real questions of tikkun kli and other kinds of halachic issues. So the short answer is the issue of halacha is the main, I don't know, deterrence is the right word, is a major issue for congregations that do not yet use music, do not use musical instruments. I think it will have an impact on it. And I do know that the Rabbinical Assembly, the vote came to the law committee again last year, and it did not pass. The new tshuva did not pass. I understand that it was sent back to the drawing boards. I sent Rabbi Dorf a copy of the survey for his information, just if he wanted to have what that data was. He said, thank you very much, but I'm not sure what the status of the tshuva is now, if it's being rewritten or not.
And if the tshuva did come, it would probably not necessarily be a 100% yes or no. It would be a split or in some way.
Yeah, my sense is that it may say brass instruments, yes. Reed instruments, yes, unless you break the reed. String instruments, no. I mean, again, and by the way, I think that's really the piece that is causing the issue. And then you start having the issue of you have, what is it, a Jewish musician versus a non-Jewish musician. I mean, the good news about this is you could spend years just coming up with all the various complications to get the answer to the question.
Right.
And by the way, and I think that's to the benefit of the movement, that people are asking the questions. It's not so good if you want a clear answer, but at least people are fully aware of the issues that are there, and I think their thinking is impacted by them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Paul, I have a kind of a two-part question.
This is
part
Neil
one,
Schwartz. I don't think he is.
I'm sorry. I should have identified.
I recognize Neil's voice. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, part one is my memory of staffing Ramah is that we had this understanding, L'shem Chinuch, you can be Mekil. And I'm wondering whether that can be drawn out of, for instance, a synagogue I was working in used musical instruments on Friday night only when it was a kid service and for, interestingly enough, Simchat Torah, because I was kid-friendly and kid-oriented. The other part of the question is there a tendency that JTS is turning out, at least among the rabbis, I don't know for sure about the Chazanim, more right-wing graduates now, and does this correspond in any way with the fact that in many synagogues that I've noticed, the most successful lay involvement seems to be in the more traditional, like a minion within a minion sort of situation. So it's kind of a two sides of the same thing. Are we mekil l'shem chinuch when there are kids around? And on the other hand, is the movement tending toward the right halachically by virtue of what the core wants and what the new graduates are putting into the synagogues?
Well, I can answer the first question more easily. The impression I get is that a lot of the congregations that do use musical instruments, it is very specifically when it's a kid-centered or kid participation service. Over and over again, that was things that was noted. Or you would have a congregation that says, yeah, we play a guitar with our junior congregation kiddie service on Shabbos morning, but we would never play one in the main sanctuary. So I think you may be right on that piece, the L'shem Chinuch. There are people who are willing to be a bit more makiel on that. As for using musical instruments on Simchat Torah, it's Yom Tov Sheni Shogal Yod at the end of a very long month. So I could see where those would be issues that might draw down on some of the halachic issues altogether in that sense. I'm not necessarily sure that that's necessarily kids so much as again, it's Yom Tov Sheni Shogal Yot on something that's out there. In terms of the graduates, I did not ask the question about how long you have been out of where you got trained, because again, this is open for rabbis and cantors, and I'm not sure that at this point I can tell you, especially since we've got graduates from three major schools or four major schools, actually the Seminario in Argentina and Ziegler and the Seminary in Schechter in Jerusalem. If I had to choose, my guess is that the Schechter in Jerusalem people would be likely to be the most traditional on the question of musical instruments, and my sense would be the Seminario graduates would probably be the ones who would be most comfortable with it, just based on the whole Marshall Meyer history. But I don't know the answer, and as I said, I didn't ask the question about halachic hashkafa and that and how that impacts the choices of whether or not to allow musical instruments. But again, across the board, the issue of halacha came up over and over and over again. There were a couple of times where the rabbis have said they'd be willing to do it, and the ritual committee wasn't willing to, but those were much more in the minority.
Okay, I'm going to close off questions on the subject so that we can get to the Torah reading survey, and should there be time at the end, I'm going to ask people, if you have questions, to email me them, and I will ask them on your behalf. So,
Torah reading. Okay. Again, this is one of these. It actually began with a rather innocent question. A congregation called their KRM, the person who works with them at the United Synagogue level, and said, "What's the story with triennial reading?" Well, at that point, everybody knew that 80 or 90% of our congregations were reading triennial. So we decided to ask and find out and prove, of course, that we were right, which we did not. We had a pretty good response on this one. We had 250 congregations responded to us, and again, from across the country. If you take a look at page 2, you can see the chart, a pretty good distribution all the way across the continent. And what we discovered is that 2/3 of our congregations are using triennial, as opposed to, as we said, we were expecting the 80 to 85%. So what we are finding is that more congregations are doing a full Kriya, at least those who responded to us, than do not. And if you take a look at the chart at the bottom of page 2, you can see where the breakdown is. Again, now, Northern Pacific, the West Coast, two specifically, Northern Pacific and Pacific Southwest, because we had fewer responses from them, that chart may be tilted a little bit more, but you can see that across the board, Metni, which is the metropolitan New York area, it's a close to 50-50 split, whereas at the other places, the 2/3, 1/3 split does pretty well hold. It's reversed in Southeast Seaboard. The 2/3 say they read triennial, but the other ones, it holds. That pretty well sticks to the way it is. The other question we then asked is, how big is your shul? And does that have an impact? And again, this 2/3, 1/3 split holds almost everywhere. The only exception is the congregations reporting who have membership of over 1,000 units are more likely to be reading the full Torah reading at a 60-40. It's not a huge difference, but the 2/3, 1/3 split pretty well holds for everybody else. With the smaller congregations, the 2/3, even a little bit more, than that. Again, but up to 750, the split is pretty well there, as in that same ratio. We then ask the question, so who does the Torah reading at the shul? And across the board, again, 40% of our congregations show that it's volunteer exclusively. 30% say that it's a combination of volunteer and professional. So, you know, those are the people who are reading the Torah. 30%, just a third of our congregations still depend on a professional Torah reader. If you take a look at the top of page 4, this chart absolutely floored me. I was expecting major differences between triennial readers and full parasha readers. And instead, the numbers are nearly identical. If you take a look where the red in the middle is the volunteer readers versus the green who are the professionals versus the combination, whether you have a full parsha or a triennial reading, the breakdown is nearly identical. So then we ask, so who's doing the volunteer readers? In the congregations, adults and teens, but by far more have adult readers than anybody else. And then I asked the question about teen with incentives or without incentives. Some congregations will give scholarship, for either Israel or USY events or something to encourage kids to read. And remarkably, the congregations who have teen readings, 3% are teens who do read with incentives and 20% without. But what you're looking here is that our adult Torah readers, our volunteer Torah readers across the board are almost all adults. So who are the professional readers? If you look at the top of page 5, what we're seeing is that 20% are paid people who are just paid by Ale Kriya. That is what they do. Ritual directors is about 9%, which is actually reflecting the great decrease in the number of ritual directors, shamases, whatever we want to call them, who are out there. That number has been decreasing relatively quickly. My sense is that when the congregation is running short on funds, the ritual director is out there. If you take a look where the chazanim are reading, 25% of the professional readers are chazanim, 40% are rabbis. My sense is that probably does a reflection of the shul staff size. The preponderance of rabbis there is probably because those are congregations where the rabbi might be the entire professional staff. At the bottom of the page, you can see this is asking the same question. Who's your Torah reader, but based the question on full versus triennial reading? And here is the one place where you can see the huge difference is that the vast majority, 72% of the congregations who have Baalei Kriya, professional Baalei Kriya, that is their only job, they're the ones who are most likely to be reading the full parasha. And I thought that was an interesting piece. So at least one of my hypotheses was close, is that the chances are that if you were hiring someone who is a full-time Balkore, that the person was working in a shul where they do the full reading. Top of the next page, you know, I assume that if you have a primary paid reader, if you have a secondary, what is your reading style there? And again, there's not a whole big surprise there, although you'll see that the majority of the time the backup reader is the chazan in the congregations. At least certainly that's the place if you're reading a full parasha. Once we had everybody answering questions about Torah reading, so we started asking a few other questions. The first one we checked about is, do you maintain the custom of Kohen first Aliyah, Levi second Aliyah? And I was surprised. I will tell you, I was absolutely shocked to find out that 77% of the congregations maintain that. I had assumed that especially in egalitarian congregations, that was gone. So that was very much a surprise. If you look at the right-hand column, though, at the bottom of page 6, what you'll see is that this is a place where there is a difference, a significant difference, between the congregations that read the full parasha and those who don't. In congregations that do not read the full parasha, those are the people who are less likely to maintain Kohen Levi as they are, where the congregations that do the full parasha are a lot more likely to keep it. So we then moved from Kohen Levi to about women's participation. And again, on the top of page 7, this was a chart that struck me, is that if you take a look at what women do in our congregations, let's ignore the Kohen Levi one for a minute, and the Hagba, my sense is the reason why that number is only 92%, maybe because people say, you know, people can't, women are not able to pick up a Torah, clearly said by somebody who's never had to deal with a screaming two-year-old. But across the board, you see 96%, 97%, 98% are women participation, and this is absolutely across the board. The charts at the bottom show the division by whether somebody reads triennial or full, but over and over again, the only place where there is a significant difference between reading the full parasha and the partial parasha is whether or not a woman can be called for the Kohen and Levi Aliyah. And there, I mean, that's the only place. Everything else, full parasha, partial parasha, everybody across the board, women have within at least the 250 congregations that responded, which is, again, about 50% of the congregations that we would have expected to be able to answer, women have a full and equal role in the Torah service portion of our service. And, again, if you were looking for the information, I did put in this one the various tshuvot from the RA on those various topics about triennial reading, calling Rishon Sheni, and calling Bat Kohen and Bat Levi. So all of those can work. That's the quick summary. I'm happy to take any questions or comments about the Torah reading and or the music as time goes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask for no comments, but only questions relevant to the subject.
Yeah, I was going to say, I often go to conventions, and I try to, I'm the parliamentarian for the RA, and I always try to invoke what I call the Jeopardy rule, which is when you stand up to the microphone, please be sure that you're asking a question.
Yeah, so forgive me, colleagues, understand that we want the questions and not a statement from you. As interesting as it may be, just pertinent to the subject would be very much appreciated. Okay, any questions?
I would like to pick up on a comment that was made earlier by Rabbi Drazen regarding Simchat Torah specifically of Yom Sheni Shel Galuyot, and that is regarding the larger issue beyond instruments. I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, perhaps 30 or 40 years ago, when Rabbi Gershon Cohen was the chancellor, he pronounced at that time that congregations may, if they choose, through their Mara de Atra, have a situation like of only one day Yontif, and they would not be expelled from the conservative movement. And very, very few congregations took it on. And I'm wondering whether that was a decision that he had made at the time on his own, or was he consulting with the Rabbinical Assembly Law Committee? Because that is also a question that has been asked here and there, especially when you read the Torah, and he said that Shivat Yamim Tochal Matzot.
Okay, so we've got that question, right?
I would love to be able to break the fast
the short,
earlier
the short,
on Pesach.
The short answer to that one is it did go through the law committee. I remember because I was in college and one of my jobs on the side was doing some pickup work for the RA, and I actually sat at a typewriter and on paper typed the tshuva. So while it is indeed an accepted stance of the law committee that you do not have to observe Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galuyot by default, and again, I forget the number, I don't have a number right offhand, is a tshuva that allows a more liberal understanding of halakha that has not been taken up by the majority of our congregations.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a question that was emailed to me about the musical instrument survey. It seems a shame that some useful info was not elicited, such as the size of the congregation, the age spread of the congregants. What does Rabbi Drazen think is the most useful way to evaluate this material for purposes of attracting more worshipers, both from within the congregation and beyond?
You know, I think that is a question that has a lot to do with where our congregation is located, not only whether urban or suburban or exurban, but the nature of the community where people are and the kind of places that are in the neighborhood around. I don't think that size of the congregation as such is a real issue here. I'm not sure that is a place where the focus makes a difference. I think that one can take a look ultimately at what's going on in the service that's there. And before I would start saying that the musical instrument is the answer to the question, I would really want to spend a lot more time talking about what are we doing. You know, have the rabbi, the chazan, the ritual committee sat down and really talk about what are we trying to do with our services? What kind of thing, what kind of style are we having? Is participatory something that means that the pulpit is singing and the people in the congregation are sort of humming along? Or is participation people standing up and clapping? Again, that a lot of that has to do with the nature of who's in the shul and who's in the service and what's going on. I think that you do have to have a real analysis of what's going on in our service, what impacts our people. If you have services, and you know you have 1,000 members and you're having a hard time getting the minyan, that's a real message about what the nature of your service as well as the location of it. If you're in a place where the vast majority of your members are not nearby, those are all things that impact considerably who's going to come to your service. People rarely, at least according to Alban, rarely will go and drive from a first ring suburb, go home to at a third ring suburb, and then drive back to a first ring suburb for services. People will drive from ring one to ring two or from ring three to ring two, but people don't skip. Then people don't drive, for instance, from the city out to a second or third ring suburban synagogue. So all those are pieces that impact, and I'm not sure that you can judge anything from a survey itself except to say that it is the issue is not instrument, the issue is the nature of the service. And the congregation that wants to do this seriously needs to sit down and do some serious thinking about what's the goal of our worship services, what is going to impact our people, and work from that as a basis, and then musical instruments may be an answer, but I don't think that's the place to start.
Okay, any other final comments by Rabbi Drazen? We're close to the end of our time. If people want to continue the conversation, just one question, is there a way, should they email you or email me and I'll send it to you? What would be your preference?
I'm happy to take emails. And as long as our email system works, which is not a vadai, I'll always be able to answer. But my email address is Drazen, Drazen, @uscj.org.
Great. Okay. Any final comments before we end today's talk? And I want to thank you, by the way, for your time, your expertise, and for providing us with such clear examples and really putting it out there for us and explaining it in a way that is interesting and provocative.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad I had the opportunity to share what the one thing I would like to say is that we are doing services, like continuing surveys, I mean. We are doing one right now about daily services, so if you have not taken that opportunity, check back on your email. You'll find a link for taking that one. And in the future, as other surveys come out, I hope that members of the Candorous Assembly will participate. And as well, if you have some questions that you would like us to find out the answer, what's going on, what is the status of the conservative congregation, drop me a note, and we may be able to use your idea as a basis for another survey.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone, and look forward to seeing many of you at convention. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Yep.